Castro. We've got our own bearded heroes, surely, that we should aspire to promote, to talk about, to try and live up to their example.
Well, I agree with that. And I think that part of the problem is that there are, in the 20th and 21st century, very few examples of successful Islamic resistance movements sort of pushing forward and taking state authority and even just, you know, being able to be influential in different states. There are some of them, of course, as we know. But for the most part, I suppose people tend to praise people like Fidel Castro and, you know, people like that because they have, you know, they're very recent examples of successful anti-imperialist action. And actually, I don't think that's necessarily a problem, because if the extent of that is joining a coalition that is trying to tackle two of the greatest threats and problems for Muslims geopolitically in the world today, which is the United States of America and the State of Israel, then I think we should be allied in that. In fact, if you look at someone like Hugo Chavez, he was completely counter to some of these militant atheists. He was a, you know, practicing Catholic himself. He was a very strong ally of Iran. He used to talk about Imam Mahdi. He used to understand that Islam is actually, you know, politically very anti-imperialist and an ally. So, you know, we don't have greats like Hugo Chavez with us today on the planet, but, you know, there are examples of actually different anti-imperialist leaders across the world coming together, understanding the importance of religion in liberation. You know, some people call that liberation theology. That's got a particular trend in certain countries in Latin America. And I don't see a problem with that. Obviously, Islam is comprehensive, but it doesn't mean that we can't look to inspiring and successful movements that have managed to do things that are not necessarily contradictory or incompatible with Islam.
For sure. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. There's so much more we could have discussed, but unfortunately we are running out of time. So I'll have to say thank you to you, Amar, and thank you to Mizan as well for joining us. And thank you to everyone at home. Join us again next week for another edition of Eye on Islam, inshallah. But for now, assalamu alaikum.
In the limelight. Experts say the freezing of Russia's forex holdings has accelerated de-dollarization around the world. IMF has recently said that the share of US dollar in global reserves has reached to its lowest level in 28 years. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted, the process of diversifying away from the greenback by countries around the world is gathering pace according to the latest data from the International Monetary Fund. The statistics tracked by the Washington-based institution show that the dollar's share of official gold and foreign currency reserves dropped to a nearly three-decade low of 58% in the fourth quarter of 2022. The move has reportedly been gradual, and the dollar share of central banks' foreign reserves is now nearly down to a level last seen in 1995. The long-standing status of the dollar as the world's dominant currency has been steadily eroded in recent years amid concerns over soaring U.S. debt and widely implemented sanctions using the currency as leverage. The shift was more pronounced when adjusted for exchange rates, according to Stephen Jen, CEO of Eurozone SLJ Capital Limited, as quoted by Reuters. He said, What happened in 2022 was a very sharp plummeting in the dollar share in real terms, calling the decline a reaction to the freezing of half of Russia's $640 billion in gold and FX reserves. According to Jen, the drastic step sparked a rethink in countries like Saudi Arabia, China, India, and Turkey about diversifying their reserves to other currencies. The yuan's share of global over-the-counter forex transactions has increased from nearly zero 15 years ago to 7%, according to the Bank for International Settlements, BIS. After the move against Russia, other countries are questioning, what if you fall on the wrong side of sanctions? BNY Mellon strategist Jeffrey Yu told the media. He said global central banks are currently seeking to diversify their assets, scooping up corporate debt, tangible assets such as real estate and other currencies. This is the process that is underway, Mark Tinker, managing director of TAS Fund Hong Kong, told the agency, adding, the dollar is going to be used less in the global system. Meanwhile, Mehr News Agency reported de-dollarization is not a voluntary choice, but it is a necessary response to the weaponization of the dollar, Iran's first vice president said recently, adding that ditching the dollar will endanger U.S. influence in the world. Addressing the 51st edition of the Asian Clearing Union ACU summit in Tehran recently, Iran's first vice president, Mohammad Mukhber, praised the intention of the ACU member states to create a new chapter of economic relations and financial and commercial interactions. A country with a size of 1.64 million square kilometers and a population of about 85 million, who are mostly young and educated people, Iran has a high capacity to attract domestic and foreign investments and take advantage of the demographic opportunities in increasing production and economic growth, Mukhber said. Vice President Mukhber examined the role of the dollar in the world economy and said, de-dollarization is not a voluntary choice by countries anymore. It is the country's inevitable response to the weaponization project of the dollar. In the past decades, the weaponization of the dollar has forced countries to find a way to get rid of the impact of possible sanctions in the future, Mukhber further asserted. Referring to the increasing number of countries that are looking to reduce their dependency on the U.S. dollar, the vice president said that the weakening of the dollar can be a serious threat to the United States' influence at the international level. Iran's first vice president went on to conclude that the Islamic Republic of Iran is ready to develop its banking and trade relations with other countries, especially ACU member states.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
CRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program of Viewpoints. I am Beta, the host of today's episode, and here with me there are two dear guest speakers, Brother Ali and Brother Hassanin. Assalamu alaikum, brothers.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, as we talked up to here, we know that the Palestinian people are under oppression from the Israeli country and Zionism. And wherever there is a conflict, there is a clash between two people. We have to find for the dark side and the bright side. And as we know here in this story, Israel is the dark side of the scene. So if you are the dark side, you have to commit some crimes to achieve this actually position in this battlefield. And I want you to elaborate more the crimes of Israel and things that they committed to achieve this position in this battlefield. So, Brother Hassani, let's start with you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, the crimes which were committed by the Zionist criminals during the historic events of Gaza, the massacres of civilians, the destructions of defenseless homes, the impaling of young infants, the bombing of schools and mosques, the use of phosphorus bombs and outload weapons, like, you know, there are a lot of crimes. These crimes lasted for several years, and there are many other numerous crimes. So this proved that the savage and criminal nature of the leaders of the Zionist regime. So, and the fake Zionist state that have not changed in the least since the early decades. It hasn't changed at all. So, you know, so there's still these crimes to be seen. And exactly the same policies and the same brutal and ruthless nature which gave rise to such tragedies as those of, you know, you see the examples. Like we get the news daily, you know, about the crimes in Israel, in Palestine. So still this rules the dark hearts and minds and thoughts today.
Yeah.
So they're still being continued.
Thank you. So, what about you, Brother Ali?
Yeah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Before diving into the question, I'd like to differentiate between Zionism and Judaism. I want to say that there are two different things. There are some good Jewish brothers and sisters who are real believers, and they have nothing to do with Zionism.
Of course.
When we are talking about Zionism, we are not necessarily talking about the Jewish people in the world, or even in the Israel. This is first. Second, I want to say that the kind of crimes that are happening in Palestinian land and by Israeli regime is, I think, very, very rare in the history even.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have any records, historical record, at least for the last five centuries, to some crimes like this to happen, and the rate of violence I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. On a daily basis,
yeah. Even I have heard by one historian that he was claiming that in the course of history there was nothing like this.
Mm-hmm.
But since I myself in my mind had some cases, I did not dare even to call it, I mean, in the course of history, in the whole history, there was no precedent for such crimes and violences in the history. So that's why I'm just limiting it to last five centuries. We have learned and read about the colonialism and the type of, let's say, crimes and violence that happened there. But even here is more and more severe and more vast. So when we heard that, for example, French army killed 1.5 million of Algerian people during one or 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Or we have heard that, let's say, British government killed how many people, for example, in that African country or in the other Asian country.
Right.
So we have too many records of such crimes and violences, but we can confess that whatever is happening now in the Palestine is even more severe and more dreadful than that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one side. But more sad, but more dreadful, is the silence of Western countries and the so-called followers of human rights.
Mm-hmm.
So how come? Aren't the people who are living in Palestine or in that area human beings? If they are, so why are they silent? If one person is being killed or terrorized in one European country, they are all condemning, the terrorists that did that. So how come they are that silent in the case of a massacre that is happening in Palestine? Okay, we're not expecting any good thing from Westerners, mm-hmm. from Easterners, from other countries, from Muslim countries. So we are living in a savage world that all are silent when, a wolf is killing and is chewing up the bodies of people and no one says anything. And even more dreadful than that is the support that America and U.S. is making, and the support is that U.S. is giving to Israel to claim that they are defending their rights. What right? Where it come from? Where did it come from? How can you say that they are defending their rights? Are you humans? Are you, humanistically speaking, not Islamically mm-hmm. speaking? Are you humans? Are you? Do you believe in human rights? Do you believe in the human rights of your own people in your own country? What happened to the Davidians in two decades ago in your country when you suffocated, almost 5,000 of them in a building? Do you care for the human rights? No, these are, bitter jokes that we are hearing in these days and nights.
Yeah.
In these days
dark
and nights.
Comedy.
And, yeah. So I want to say that we talk about the bad or sad part of the story, but I want to say that they are going to... now, we have a proverb in Farsi. We say that an ant, when it is about to die, it has its own wings.
Yeah, yeah, I know that. Mm-hmm.
Right?
I think even in Arabic, we have the same.
Yeah. Do you know Arabic?
I don't know. It was in the textbook of... my actually previous school.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We have a proverb that says an ant when it is about to die, it will have wings.
Wings.
Yeah.
So when we see this pressure and this, let's say, massacre that is actually aggravated day by day in mm-hmm. Israel, it
yeah.
means that it is inshallah, hopefully, the near death time of the Israel, and it will be so. Hopefully, so they are putting all these pressures on the Palestinians to threaten them, but it will actually
make them stronger.
It will make them stronger, hopefully, and we are hopeful, as we have seen day in and day out. We have seen this strength that's shown itself, and it is being seen in the behavior of the Palestinian combatant in the Palestinian area, the Palestinian land.
Thank you, Brother Ali. Actually, you answered two of my questions that I wanted to ask here. The first, you talked about Israeli people and the differentiation between Judaism and Zionism, which is really important to keep in mind here. And also, you answered this question that are they stronger than ever or not? And what does that mean, this strength? And you answered beautifully to this question that it may be the sign that they are near to their end. And these actually decades. But a question that is not answered here yet is that what is the root, what is the reason of this crime? And why, if there is a special root or reason for these crimes, Israel is still declining and just not accepting these kind of things that they are committing. Brother Sinan Amalier.
Before actually answering the main question, I would like to point out to something that...
Yeah.
Are they actually stronger when you asked? As we can see, according to the analysis and the news and everything at the reality, we see the decline of Israel. So it definitely doesn't mean they're stronger, they're getting stronger. But yeah, it sure means that, due to the technological advances have made their crimes much bigger. That's due to the technology and compared to the previous early years. So their crimes are now on a bigger scale, but it doesn't mean that they have become stronger. So, and For the next question, the reason behind these crimes, I would like to quote here Ayatollah Khamenei. He mentions in his book the Palestine. He says that the reason and the purpose behind committing these crimes is that they want to make two things clear to the people of the world. One thing is that this cancerous tumor should be preserved at any price. Another thing is that they want to convince the world that it is faced with coercion and bullying, and that they do not care what is said about them.
Yeah.
So they just, they don't care about whatever is being told to them. So also we have, as brother has already mentioned, the countries, they don't really care what Israel does. And Israel really doesn't care about brother also pointed towards the human rights. So they don't really care about the human rights as such. And so this is to say that they want to convince the people of the world that no kind of reasoning and no kind of action will be successful against their evil thoughts and their evil plannings.
Yeah. Brother Ali, do you have to
end? Yes, there is another point that I wanted to say with regard to the silence of the world.
International yeah.
arena. We have to add one more dimension to that, and the silence of Muslim Ummah. But we have to differentiate between this silence and the other silence. The silence of Muslim Ummah is not due to their indifference towards the issue. It is due to lack of good leaders in Islamic world rather than the people. So we have to differentiate between this silence of people with regard to the crimes that is happening in Palestine and the ones that we see from the West. From the West, I mean, naturally, based on their claims and whatever they usually show as slogans, that they have deafened the ears of the whole world, that we are the defenders of human rights, and they are in reality vice versa. But the Muslims do not dare to say anything in front of, with regard to the pressure that comes to them from the side of their governments. For example, in some neighboring countries, Islamic neighboring countries, which of them can come, for example, into streets and, let's say, show this disagreement or objection with Israel crimes? Some countries we have, for example, we have some countries in the Islam world that they're stance is really outstanding, but they're quite silent in these areas, in these issues. Have you ever heard of any demonstrations, any riots, or any demonstrations, or any slogans against Israel there? No. But it might be even the center of the Islamic Ummah, from physically speaking, right? Or another Islamic country, which is the neighbor of Palestine. I mean, they, in order to protect the Palestinians, they stop closing their borders with Palestine.
So they're letting the Palestinians in.
So is it really the stance of the people? No. It is the state stance of the, due to the useless or coward leaders of their countries. So why should they be indifferent towards the crime that comes to the people there? But the people in Islamic Ummah actually are silent, and the reason is this. But if you want to see the exact idea of the people, Muslims, about the Israel and the crimes that is happening there, go and perform what you had and ask your Muslim brothers and sisters there to know what the Islam world thinks.
And inshallah, one day we'll defeat with the help of Allah and the support of Allah behind us, we'll defeat these dark side of the story, and the sun will shine brighter than every day. Thank you for listening to us, dear listeners, and it was all the time we had for today's episode. I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaykum assalam.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Oh, No mother, no father to wipe away my tears. That's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt the Palestine. Tomorrow will be free. Palestine. Tomorrow will be free.
Food for thought.
Salam, dear friends. And how about beginning the day with a saying from Imam Reza, peace upon him, the Prophet's 8th infallible heir. The evilest of people is that who deprives others of his aid, eats alone, and lashes his bondman.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
U.S. police stole the life of another black man, Keenan Anderson. A 35-year-old father and schoolteacher. That day, Keenan was in a minor traffic accident in Venice, California. He asked the police for help, but was treated like a criminal. Keenan was chased, held face down on the asphalt, and tased several times by the Los Angeles Police Department, LAPD, as he begged for his life. He went into cardiac arrest and died. The release of body cam footage a couple of weeks later prompted a furious reaction on social media. Comedian Travon Free called for the LAPD to be held accountable at all costs in a viral post on Twitter. The LAPD murdered Keenan Anderson, a beloved high school English teacher and father who flagged them down for help after a car accident. He was a threat to no one. He needed help and it cost him his life. Like many of the incidents with police killings, The footage reveals an utter lack of regard for addressing the ingrained disenfranchisement of Black Americans.
I think it's part of a bigger problem that we've had in this country for centuries, right? I mean, our country has a sad founding in slavery. And, you know, when we moved away from slavery as a country, you know, the way we did that in part was by people saying, okay, well, now we're just going to police these minority groups harder, right? So slavery doesn't exist, but we're going to make their lives harder through the laws, through Jim Crow laws, and we're going to police them hard, and we're going to make sure that minorities aren't really treated as equals in this country. And so I think what you're seeing today is still just a part of that, a part of really unfair policing in our country of minorities that's existed for centuries.
Anderson was a cousin of Black Lives Matter co-founder Patrice Cullors. In the wake of his death, Cullors wrote, "Keenan deserves to be alive right now. His child deserves to be raised by his father. Keenan, we will fight for you and for all of our loved ones impacted by state violence." Los Angeles Police Department is now pushing a narrative that Keenan Anderson is responsible for his own death. Preliminary toxicology tests performed in Anderson's body by the police department itself have found traces of cannabinoids and cocaine metabolite in his system, results that in no way diminish the extreme violence inflicted on Anderson by the police. The idea that drug possession or use by Black people creates grounds enough to warrant police violence, even deadly violence, has marked half a century of U.S. policing. Cops from the department that murdered George Floyd attempted to blame his death on the fentanyl found present in his system, too.
You also learn, ladies and gentlemen, that George Floyd struggled with an opioid addiction. He struggled with it for years. You will learn that he did not die from a drug overdose. He did not die from an opioid overdose. We're going to ask at the end of this case that you find Mr. Chauvin guilty for his excessive use of force against George Floyd that was an assault that contributed to taking his life, and for engaging in imminently dangerous behavior, putting the knee on the neck, the knee on the back, for 9 minutes and 29 seconds without regard for Mr. Floyd's life. We're going to ask that you find him guilty of murder in the second degree, murder in the third degree, and second degree manslaughter.
In the words of Melanie Okoa, director of police practices at the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California, LAPD's disclosure of information about incidents in which its officers kill people are public relations actions. They're not a public information service. The fact that the LAPD is deploying this public relations tactic almost 3 years after George Floyd's death is a grim reminder of how little has changed.
That this pattern of race-based policing is caused primarily by an organizational culture that can be described in three ways. First, flawed training, which emphasized a paramilitary approach to policing. Second, deficient accountability systems that are designed to not hold officers accountable for misconduct and therefore fail to hold officers accountable for misconduct. And lastly, former and current city and MPD leaders who have not collectively acted with the urgency, coordination, and intentionality necessary to address racial disparities in policing, to improve public safety, and increase community trust.
In a paper published in the science journal Neuron in 2020, Carl Hart, a professor of psychology at Columbia University, who researches drug addiction, said the exaggeration of the negative impacts of recreational drug use have been used to justify police brutality against Black people. Keenan Anderson's death was a tragedy on many levels. He was one of America's few Black male teachers. Only 7% of America's teachers are Black, and less than 2% are Black men. Meanwhile, studies have shown the racial disparities in U.S. policing. Despite making up less than 14% of the population, Black people are 3 times more likely than white people to die at the hands of the police. This situation creates a life or death lottery whenever Black people encounter the police. In 2022, police killed 1,176 people, more killings in any of the last 10 years.
I think it is failing, not only failing, it is getting worse every time because of the toxic politics, the rhetoric from Washington, from the White House, from the Capitol Hill about the very existence. I remember that during President Trump's presidency, there were a lot of discussions about these racially charged issues, and they basically dismissed that, and that exasperated the issue, the disagreements. Mm. And Biden, President Biden, promised to tackle that, but I have not seen any meaningful measures, at least on the national level, to tackle this.
The reality of U.S. policing persists as a shameless and reform-resistant threat to black lives. The uprisings that followed Floyd's murder were met with harsh state repression in the streets, and calls to defund the police were derided as delusional. Police budgets have further swelled, and impunity has remained almost unconditional. According to U.S. civil rights activist Bishop Talbert Swan, the cold and callous way black life is handled by those sworn to protect and serve is indicative of the staying power of white supremacy and systemic racism, which is the foundation of these yet-to-be United States.
I really feel disrespected, to be honest with you. I think that the Speaker of the City Council, Corey Johnson, and the mayor believe that perhaps we don't have the intellect to be able to tell the difference between accounting tricks and actually defunding the police. We asked for defunding the police because we understand that police do not make black communities safe, and we wanted more funding for the programs that that do make us safe.
Keenan was one of the three men of color who lost their lives in early January following unnecessarily violent encounters with the Los Angeles Police Department. Two of the men, Takar Smith and Oscar Sanchez, were fatally shot. Moreover, Keenan Anderson's death has exposed the post-George Floyd frauds. Polling in early September 2020 showed many Americans, particularly white Americans, support for the Black Lives Matter movement receded just 3 months after Floyd's murder, with a majority opposed to the movement for racial justice. In the aftermath of George Floyd's death, millions of Americans poured to the streets, giving impetus to the Black Lives Matter movement. But now, 3 years after, black Americans are still desperately trying to forge a consensus on how to stop the senseless, unprovoked violence of police officers. While it's a new year, black people are already feeling the sting of the same racist tactics repeatedly deployed by U.S. police.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salaam Alaikum. Welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Thank you for choosing this program to listen to. Today we're going to speak about the blessings of visiting Imam Reza's Hale Shrine. Today, Monday, is the 9th of Zilqa'dah, 1444, of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 8th of Khordad, 1402, of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 29th of May, 2023, of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Now we'll listen to verse 124 of chapter Al-Baqarah.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. وإذ ابتلى إبراهيم ربه بكلمات فأتمهن قال إني جاعلك للناس إماما قال ومن ذريتي قال لا ينال عهد الظالمين.
And mention, O Muhammad, when Abraham was tried by his Lord with commands and he fulfilled them. Allah said, Indeed, I will make you a leader for the people. Abraham said, And of my descendants? Allah said, My covenant does not include the wrongdoers.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
It is understood from the verse that the position and rank of imamate which was bestowed upon Abraham, peace be upon him, Prophet Ibrahim, peace be upon him, only after successfully enduring those frequent difficult trials was above and beyond the rank of the prophethood. Prophethood and messengership is only a matter of receiving some commandments from Allah and preaching them as glad tidings and warnings. All of these are true in the case of imamate. In addition to the practicing the divine ordinance and training the souls of individuals outwardly and inwardly, it is clear, of course, that many of the prophets had the rank of imamate too.
Allahumma salli ala Ali ibn Musa al-Riza al-Murtaza. Al-Imam al-Taqi al-Nabi. وحجتك على من فوق الأرض ومن تحت الثرى يا الصديق الشهيد صلاة كثيرة تامة زاكية متواصلة متواترة مترادفة كأفضل ما صليت على أحد من أوليائك.
And the continuation of the discussion about the topic blessings of Imam Reza's ziyarah, we reach to this point. One of the companions of the Imam, Imam Reza, narrated, I inquired the eighth Imam about the reward for the ziyarah of one of the Imam's shrine, and His Holiness replied, the same as the reward for ziyarah of Master of Martyrs' shrine. Then I again asked, what about the one who visits Imam Hussein's shrine? He said, I swear to God, his reward is heaven. In other narratives, the reward of visiting the eighth Imam's shrine is considered to be equal to that of Hajj. That is, as a Hajj, sins are forgiven after Hajj, and he's purified, and the Muslim purified is purified like when he was born. Imam Reza's ziyarah will bring about the same reward for the pilgrim. Sheikh At-Tusi quoted Imam Reza, This is a tomb in Khorasan, and there will be time when the tomb will be a place for the angels resort and circling around that place until the resurrection day when the trumpet will be blown. This tomb is located in the city of Tus.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم Today we are going to talk about the blessings of Imam Radha alayhi salam and the importance of his graveyard and holy shrine. In Usul al-Kafi, the late Sheikh Sadur narrated that all of the Shias have a vow to the innocent Imams, and to visit their holy shrines is the way to keep the vow. Therefore, if anyone who rushes to visit their shrines willingly, and while believing in what they appreciate, the innocent Imams and the infallible Imams alayhim salam will be his or her intercessors on the resurrection day. There is a narration that says that I inquired the 8th Imam alayhi salam about the reward for the ziyarah and pilgrimage of one of the Imam's shrine. And His Holiness replied, the same as the reward of ziyarah and pilgrimage of Master of Martyrs, Sayyidul Shahada, that is Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Then I again asked, what about the one who visits Imam Hussein's holy shrine? His Holiness replied and said, I swear to God, his reward is heaven. In other narrations, the reward of visiting the 8th Imam's shrine is considered to be equal to that of Hajj. That is, as in Hajj, sins are forgiven after Hajj, and he is purified like when he was born. Imam Radha's pilgrimage will bring about the same reward for the pilgrims.
Allahumma salli ala Ali ibn Musa Ridha al-Murtada al-Imam al-Taqi al-Naqi.
O Allah, send blessings upon Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha, the contented, the spotlessly pure leader, and your authority on the face of the earth, and below it, the truthful and the martyr, perpetually abundant blessings that are pure and continue ceaselessly, the best of the blessings that you have sent upon any of your chosen ones.
About Imam Reza's character, this is the third one in the third episode of this series. His knowledge of all languages. He could speak all languages. The Sindhi has reported, when I was in India, I heard that Allah had an Arab proof, so I went out to seek him. I was guided to a Reza, and I went to him. I could not speak Arabic. I greeted him in my language, and he greeted me in my own language. I said to him, I have heard that Allah has an Arab argument, and I have gone out to seek him. He said, it is I. Ask me about whatever you desire. I asked him about my questions, and he answered them in my own language. Abu As-Salt has said, Reza spoke to people in their own languages. I asked him about this quality, and he replied, I'm Allah's proof over his creatures. Allah does not appoint over people a proof who does not speak their own language. Yeah. One question and its answer. How to make the most of ziyarah of Ahlul Bayt? Dear listeners, the reality is that ziyarah is an action of the heart and involves turning to someone with his heart. We can do ziyarah of people like the Masumin, peace be upon them. We can also do ziyarah of Allah, and in some du'as we refer to the Zawar of Allah, means the visitors of Allah. Another characteristic of our ziyarah. Constantly remember the infallible from the moment you leave and even on your way back home. Know that His particular attention is on you during this whole time. They have attention on you from city to city as you travel to him. Let us not be afflicted by negligence, either in the journey or especially when we enter the shrine. There are many interesting sights to see on the way into the shrine that could easily distract us, such as people from countries around the world. Leave those aside and focus on what's important.
There is a very interesting narration that we have in our hadith sources where we are told that, you know, the sixth imam as well as the seventh imam used to refer to the eighth imam as Alim Ali Muhammad. Let me read to you the narration that we have that Anna Musa ibn Ja'far kan yaqul li banihi. The seventh imam used to, you know, say to his sons, هذا أخوكم علي ibn Musa عالم عالم محمد. Your brother Ali is عالم عالم محمد. He is the learned one from Ali Muhammad, fas'aluhu an adiyanikum. Whenever you have issues about religion, refer to him. Fahfudhu ma yaqulu lakum. And then the seventh imam says to his sons, fa'inni, remember this, fa'inni sami'tu abi Ja'far bin Muhammad ghayra marratin yaqulu li. He says, I have heard my father saying to me more than once, repeatedly he has said to me, Inna alima ali Muhammad lafi sulbika. That, O Musa, so this is the sixth imam saying to his son, the seventh imam, that the alim of Ali Muhammad is going to be from you, from your loins. Walaytani adraktuhu. Sixth imam says, I wish I would meet him. But we know that the eighth imam was born later on. So he hasn't seen his grandfather, and Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq has not seen his grandson. But just this wish that the sixth imam has, Laytani adraktuhu. I wish I could see him. This itself says quite a lot about Imam Ridha alayhi salam. And then he says, فَإِنَّهُ سَمِيُّ عَمِيرِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ عَلِي. Because he is named as the same name as Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali. Salawat upon the Ikbarar.
Ali Musa Raza, Ali Musa Raza, Ali Musa Raza, Ya Ali Musa Raza, Ali Musa Raza, Ali Musa Raza, Ali Musa Raza, Ya Ali Musa Raza.
Inshallah, on the next episode of today's special, we'll learn more about Ziyara, especially Imam Reza's Ziyara. Thank you very much, and we'll leave you in Allah's blessings. Fi amanillah.
Every sound and every voice in every language ever heard. Each drop of ink that has been used to write every single word. They could never portray everything I feel in my heart and wanna say. And it's hard to explain why I could never describe my love for you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.